Hey, welcome in. Doug Gottlieb here, and you are listening to All Ball, All Basketball, All the Time. No hoop games. No hoop games to talk about. So Jeff Linder is going to join us. He's the new head coach of Wyoming, was the head coach of Northern Colorado. Check out his journey. I think you'll like it. Some good stories along the way. That's just a couple minutes away. Really quickly, I've discussed with a lot of people, and I put it out on Twitter when everything was first canceled. Are we open to the idea of seniors getting a year back? I think now that we've had a chance to catch our breath, it's been 2 weeks since everything has been canceled. And the thought in my mind is this. I think it's a great idea. I'm bummed that everybody's missing the NCAA tournament. I'm missing the NCAA tournament. But half of college basketball's seniors had played their last game. Matter of fact, all of them had played their last regular season game. So we're talking about postseason. I know they're going to vote on it. And I know that social media will try and put pressure on the NCAA and say, you got to do what's right. But what really is right? It sucks that the kids won't get to play in the tournament. I don't believe having them all be able to come back is the right thing. Unless it's the right thing in perpetuity. Everybody gets that year back. Are we doing that? Everybody gets 5 years? Gets a fifth year to play? Why not? I'd actually be okay with that. I would. You get a fifth year if you stay at the same school for 4 years? How do you do? I don't know. My other thought is this for the NBA. I do wish the NBA, with a comeback, you would do pool play into a tournament format. And I don't mind if everybody qualifies for the tournament. Or you have only the top, you know, three teams in a four-team pool qualify for the tournament. But you play a round robin, play everybody twice. That way you get some games up and going, and then you do it. But we have to realize that if the NBA comes back in the summer, how much things are going to change. Right, comes back and plays, and they play until August. You're not starting the season until late. Now it puts next year's Olympics into question. Now it probably eliminates the WNBA season. Big Three season probably gone. Again, this doesn't have anything to do with the NBA. Summer League's gone. Draft changes. A lot of things changing. This is a crazy, crazy time. I'm going to do some more pods, hopefully this week, into next week. We'll just keep pumping them out. Guys who love basketball content love this stuff. I thought we'd catch up with Jeff Linder for a myriad of reasons. He was a Division I player. He comes from a different kind of basketball family or families than some of the guys that we've had on. He's done a really good job as a head coach in Northern Colorado. They very much take an offensive-minded, and their defense approach is unique. And where he gets his offense from, we'll talk about that. He just got the job in Wyoming. It's a challenging job, but not an impossible one, right? We've seen two of their last four coaches do a tremendous job. Larry Shy did a great job there, and Steve McClain did a good job there. You can get players, you can win there. You just got to be inventive about it and have a style and buy into it. You're the only Division I school in the state. So without further ado, let's catch up with the new head coach of the Wyoming Cowboys.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, let's welcome him in. He's the new head coach of the Wyoming Cowboys. So I don't know how far a drive that is from Greeley, Colorado to Laramie, Wyoming. Jeff Linder joins us on the All Ball podcast. How far is it from Greeley to Laramie?
You know, Doug, depending on the weather, which is first and foremost, you can either cut through Fort Collins and go up 287 if the weather's nice. It's probably about an hour and 20 minutes. You don't want to fight the one-lane road, then you go up I-25, head across I-80, and it takes you about an hour, hour, 35 minutes. But it all depends on the weather.
Yeah, no, I've actually made both of those drives. When I did a game, I did Wyoming-Oregon State early this year. I made the was 285, I made that drive, which is, it's beautiful and desolate all at the exact same time, right? You're like, if I pulled off the road and drove like 500 yards in and died, I'm not sure, with the exception of following the birds, I'm not sure where anyone would find me. On the other hand, it's much prettier than driving kind of the interstate. So Greeley is close to Fort Collins. Like, how far from Fort Collins is it door to door, like to you, to get to downtown Fort Collins?
Well, depending on, yes, the kind of where you're at, but from Greeley to Fort Collins, I mean, you're looking to downtown to CSU, you're looking 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's not bad. Fort Collins is a really cool town. I've never been to Greeley. What's it like?
Greeley's actually really grown. I mean, the thing about Colorado with the growth is there's not a lot of room to grow on the west side of Interstate 25. And so now everything's getting pushed out to the east. And, you know, one of the, I think the fourth largest oil reservoir in the country sits underneath Greeley, Colorado. And so you've had a big boom in the oil and natural gas. And so it was a good time in my 4 years being at UNC and having grown up in Colorado and had been at Greeley many a times for Bronco training camp back in the day before they moved the operation down south. It has changed a lot, and it's changed for the better, and it's allowed it to be a pretty good job at the level of that.
You mentioned growing up in Colorado. That's fascinating to me because there's really, like, two basketball players during my era that I remember from Colorado, right? Chauncey, everybody knows Chauncey, and then I played with Pat Garrity when I was at Notre Dame. He's a dear friend of mine. What was your basketball existence like growing up?
Well, it came out the same year as Chauncey did in 1995. I can remember the first time seeing Chauncey when we were playing club basketball back in the day, which, you know, back then it didn't start till you're about sixth or seventh grade. Now it starts when you're 4 or 5 years old. But when you saw, I remember seeing Chauncey the first time at Cherry Creek High School when we were about to play Skyland Rec Center, which was the team that he played on. And when you walked in the gym, you're like, so that guy's a sixth grader? You just knew from right then and there that he was just different, and obviously the best player that's ever come out of the state of Colorado. And then Pat Garrity, I remember playing at CSU because CSU was recruiting him really hard back when he was kind of a junior. Cause he kind of came on the scene a little bit later. He wasn't really highly recruited up until probably the end towards his junior year, and he's a guy that saw at CSU, played against him at team camp, and obviously a guy that went on to have a great career at Notre Dame and in the NBA.
Okay, so you went to Mesa State out of high school, correct?
Yeah, I went to Mesa State out of high school, and probably a lot like you, being a point guard who thought he had all the answers and thought he knew everything about the game, kind of get humbled a little bit. Had some run-ins with Coach Skocko at the time, and started as a true freshman, but didn't make my way through the entire season, and lo and behold, ended up at Western State for Bob Hoffman, who has two courts named after him in Colorado. One at the University of Colorado, the practice center where he played, and then at Fort Lewis College where he finished up after he was done coaching me at Western. So I was fortunate to cross paths with him because he was a guy that, from an offensive standpoint, was kind of really ahead of the game. And he's a team, his teams, we always shot a lot of threes, usually led the country in three-point field goal attempts and three-point field goals made every season. So that's where I got my appreciation for the three-point shot that continues to this day.
Yeah, so, okay, so Western State, how good were you guys?
We were good. Tough job. I mean, you don't have, in Division II, you have 10 full scholarships, and I'm not sure if we had five. At that time, actually going back to my freshman year, we played maybe one of the best D2 teams of all time. Fort Hays State went undefeated back in 1995-96 with Alonzo Goldson, Sharik Simpson. I mean, they had some dudes. I mean, that was back in the day when D2 had some real guys that didn't qualify academically out of junior college. And so that was the best team to play against. But we were good. I was a good player, kind of like you. I mean, led the league in assist steals. Wasn't a great shooter. But it was a good experience. I loved the fish, loved the outdoors. One of the best places to be in the country if you like to do those things.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Okay, so you get done, and what was the decision like to go into coaching? Like, did you always want to be a coach? Like, what made you want to be a basketball coach?
Yeah, I mean, basketball is all I've ever known and all I've ever done. And Coach Hoffman said that's the direction you need to go. And for me, having grown up in North Denver, near Boulder, Coach Hoffman put a phone call, having been a former player, to Ricardo Patton at the time. And basically, Ricardo just let me kind of hop on board and basically be a volunteer assistant after I graduated. That was back in 2000-2001. And I was able to kind of live at home, but I got my foot in the door. And then I shared offices with David Moe, who is the son of Doug Moe, the former Denver Nuggets head coach. And that later that year, he actually got a Division II job at Emporia State University. And so he decided, hey, man, you're going to come with me. And so went with him to Emporia State and kind of started the journey that way.
Okay, so Doug Moe is famous in basketball from this is what I know of him. The true passing game, pass and cut, right? No screening.
Yep.
passing cut. That's the Doug Moe passing. When you guys went to Emporia State, David Moe, his son, is that what you ran?
Nip passing game. Every practice started the same. We do 3-on-0, and then we do 5-on-0. And the beauty of and for me, you know, having been under him, you saw it in such a different way. I mean, his dad saw the game in a different way, and I was actually fortunate because kind of going back to my childhood, I was a ball boy for the Denver Nuggets for 5 years, and so I had the opportunity, you know, to see Coach Mo's teams play, you know, a lot of games, and then you had, you know, the Paul Westhead era, and then my last year was, you know, the year that the Nuggets beat George Karl and the Sonics as the 8th seed, and so sure. I got to see it firsthand, and then to see him coach it, which, you know, you have to have guys that can understand how to play, because ultimately it's just playing and hooping and reading, reacting, but passing game is just whatever you want to make it to be. I mean, if you're a guy that wants to pass and cut, pass and cut. If you're a guy that wants to pass the screen away, pass the screen away. It's just a lot of just motion, but it's more cutting than screening. And so for me, it allowed me just to see the game, and a lot of what I took with me later on is, especially when I went to Boise State and Coach Rice put me in charge of the offense, just allowing guys to play, teaching guys how to play. Because as you get to a certain level, and now as you're seeing in the NBA, it's easy to take away set plays. It's easy, especially late in the season. But, you know, if you can teach guys how to play yeah. in space, which a lot of guys talk about, but there's very few guys that can really teach it. And so I was fortunate that I had that education with Coach Mo. And then from there, kind of made the jump to Midland Junior College, where Grant McCaslin, who's now the head coach at North Texas, sure. got the job and asked me to come down there with him. And so at a young age, I mean, both of us probably at the time were 26, 27, took over Midland Junior College, which is one of the top junior college jobs in the country. I mean, Spud Webb, I mean, back in the day, Mookie Blaylock. I mean, there was some real, real dudes rolling around in the whack jack. And it's a great junior college job. I mean, 6,000-seat arena. I mean, it's just everything over the top. But Grant and I was with him for 2 years there. And then knowing at the time, because kind of with being with Coach Mo, going back to Emporia State, when he was an assistant, you know, and I've been very fortunate to kind of be the kind of the family that I've been, you know, linked into with Coach Mo, was when Coach Mo was assistant in Colorado, the guys that he ran with as when he was an assistant was Mark Few, Leon Rice, Tad Boyle, Mark Turgeon. And so I was able to get into that group of guys. And then when I went to Midland Junior College, Tad was close to getting the job. Also, Randy Ray was close to getting a Division I head job. And I just knew by making that move to Midland, it would make me a lot more attractive to them, having recruited nationally, having been in a top junior college program, having some international ties. And so that allowed me to get that next job at Weber State with Randy Ray.
Okay, so give me your best Midland Junior College story. Can be about recruiting a player, a phone call at night, a run in. Like it's because I was watching. Have you watched Cheer? You watch this Netflix Cheer?
I've watched bits and pieces. Yeah.
Okay, so it's about Navarro Junior College, which is also in Texas.
Oh yeah, course.
And
course
I was trying. Right, and I was trying to explain to my family, I was like, look, this is what all junior college sports are like. They're like, what do you mean? I was like, everybody's there for a reason. Nobody really wants to be there for good, you know, and you're there to try and get a scholarship to get the hell out of there, right? Like, that's really and, you know, you go to these big ones to try and win a championship or whatever. And I was like, you know, while it seems like these crazy, terrible backstories that these kids come from are unique. Like, they are unique, but it's kind of like go to the basketball side. And we started to watch the football. What is the football version? Why am I blanking on the name?
Last chance to you. Yes,
just the language.
Independent community college.
It's a little too real for my family. Like, right between the language and whatever. And I was like, just trust me. Anyway, my point is. I gray shirted at a junior college. When we were at Oklahoma State, coach used to invite 4 junior colleges into play, you know, 2 days in a row, we'd recruit those guys. Tyler was one of them. West Ark was one of them. We'd have somebody from Kansas come down and they would play. So anyway, I need some junior college. Give me a junior college story.
Now there's where to start. So, without mentioning names, yes. Remember we had a drive from Midland to DFW Airport to pick up a kid, a Division I transfer kid. So that drive from Midland to DFW, about 4 and a half hours, and we're actually going to pick up a couple kids. And the first kid that comes in, D1 transfer, we had to wait a little bit, probably another hour, hour and a half before the other kid's flight came in. So we're sitting around, like, okay, let's go over to the mall. Let's go let's go into Barnes & Noble's, kill some time. We can walk around, do whatever. Well, as I'm kind of walking in with him, about to walk into Barnes & Noble's, the kid turns and he said, "Coach, you know, did my coach tell you about, you know, kind of some of my problems?" And I'm like, "No." And he's like, "Well, you know, I got some issues, bipolar issues, this." I'm like, okay. He's like, "I really need to smoke right now." And I'm like, "Smoke?" He's like, "Yeah, because I'm like, "All right, man. Like, I just met. I mean, hey, do what you got to do. Go smoke a cigarette. In the parking lot. Do whatever you need to do." I call Grant up, and Grant's like, I tell him, and he's like, you know, that's just a day in the life in junior college. And luckily for us at Midland, because we were at the cream of the crop in terms of junior colleges, we could kind of get a little bit different guy. But that was probably my introduction to junior college was, you know, the guy having to go get a smoke to calm his nerves before he could go into Barnes & Noble's.
It's amazing. Amazing. He did mean cigarettes, right? I just want to make sure.
There's a
high major assistant coach. I won't name his name. He was a very good player in college. And my first time I met him, you remember the NBA Summer League used to be at Long Beach State, and they'd also have these free. They also had the free agent teams, right? And so I was playing with the Lakers, but my dad had a free agent team. And so we had guys, me, Miles Simon, I think Tony Gonzalez played with some of our old AU guys. We'd play together, and then we'd have these other guys from around the country. So I go to pick up one of these dudes at the airport, and he's a really good player. And he's like, "Yo, G, what you know about some trees around here?" And I was like, "Trees? Like, we got eucalyptus trees, like, that are big in Orange County. It's from Australia." And I started, like, going into the... I'm not really a horticulturist, but I was like, we got palm trees, obviously. There's different kinds. He's like, no, my man. I need some trees. And then he makes the smoke thing. I was like, oh, yeah, I don't know.
There was no trees, but no, it was just the old fashioned. Needed a cigarette.
Best player you had at Midland?
Well, so we were, back in, junior college is definitely kind of change in terms of the talent pool, especially with the prep schools that have come around. But so we lost Grant's first year as a head coach, my first year as assistant. We lost in the semifinals of the National Junior College Tournament of Hutch. We lost in a tip-in at the buzzer to College of Southern Idaho. We were up one, and they jacked up a three, and the ball bounced just in the right direction. And big dude, I think, who ended up going to USC or Baylor, big African kid, tipped it in at the buzzer. But our starting five in Midland, our starting point guard, Timmy Crowell, went to the University of Cincinnati. Our starting two, J.D. Lewis, went to the University of Texas. Tristan Martin, who was at the three, went to the University of Houston. Mamre Diallo, who played the five for us and actually came off the bench, went to Gonzaga. Nemanja Kalasan went to Purdue, who played for us at the four. And then Ivory Clark actually started for us at the four, who went on to play at Washington State for Tony Bennett, who had a really good career at Washington State. The one guy maybe that caused Brandon Roy the most problems of his career defensively. You go back and look at Brandon Roy's games against Washington State against Ivory Clark, he struggled mightily. And so we had some really, really good players. And then I was fortunate enough to bring two or three of those guys with me to Weber State, where when we got the job at Weber with Coach Ray, we were picked dead last in the Big Sky by the media and the coaches, brought in 10 new guys, and actually ended up winning the league that year, won the Big Sky tournament, and then ended up losing to UCLA in the first round of the NCAA tournament with Collison, Afalo, Russell Westbrook, I think, was a freshman at the time, but, you know, one of Ben Howland's really good teams, I think, ended up losing in the national championship game or Final Four.
That was the team, I think, that came back and beat Gonzaga, right? They were down big to Gonzaga and won. Was that year?
Oh, yep.
Yeah. Okay, so here's a hard question. So when Rick Ray, who you had known, gets the Weber job, was it, "Hey, I can only hire if you bring dudes with you"? Was it unspoken? Like, how did that actually work at the time?
You know what's funny, Coach Ray and I, we go back a long ways. He actually recruited me when he was an assistant at CSU. They had recruited me a little bit, and then just had a relationship with him kind of before, because he was one of those guys. I mean, he was just he earned everything he got, and he earned it the right way. He had a scratch and claw. I mean, he was one of the, you know, if you ask guys around, like, who are some of the better assistants in the country, you know, his name would come up. I mean, for what he did for, you know, for Stu Morrill at CSU, and then on to Utah State, and then to Utah for Ray Giacoletti. And so we always stayed in contact. You know, always wanted to make sure that, you know, I was, you know, the guys I thought were going to have a chance to become Division I head coaches, and that we're going to do it the right way, and values align with mine, and his was definitely one of them. But it was never about, you know, players. But I knew too, if I stayed in Emporia State, that if Randy Ray or Tad Boyle were to get a job, that, you know, they're probably still going to hire me. But now maybe it's in that second or third spot, where now I'm at Midland and I got a couple dudes, and I know a couple of those dudes are going to come with me. That makes it a little bit different. So it was never, hey, you got to bring guys. But, you know, it was funny because at the same time, when Coach Ray got the job at Weber, Tad was at Wichita State, and Wichita State was making that run in the NCAA tournament. And Tad, you know, I think he was looking at a couple jobs that were open at the time, UTSA being one of them, before Brooks Thompson got it, and then UNC, which Tad's from Greeley. And I had to call Tad as he was actually walking in a shoot around for, I think, the Sweet 16 game in the MCI Center in Washington, D.C., and say, listen, Coach, I go, Coach Ray just got the job. You know, Weber State, which for people who know basketball is a great basketball job. I mean, it's a place that has a lot of tradition, has won a lot of championships, has been to a lot of NCAA tournaments. It's like, I'm not sure what you're going to do, but at the same time, I can't turn this down. And so that's had to make that phone call to Tad, and then lo and behold, made my way to Ogden, Utah.
It's funny, Tad. So I first met Tad. So I sat out 96-97 at Golden West College. And I went to Golden West because my high school coach from my freshman year, Tom McCluskey, was the head coach of Golden West. So I got to practice with the team, and then I would like coach, be an assistant coach during games, and not play to save my year. So I visited Oregon, and Darren Kalish was one assistant. He had been an AAU coach with Team Avia, so I'd known him forever. Mark Turgeon was another assistant, and Tad Boyle, who Mark had pulled out of like the financial world, right, to be an assistant coach. Like, that was their staff under Jerry Green.
Yep, high school coach. Yep, yeah, he was actually, and my first game as a high school sophomore on varsity was Tad's first game as a high school varsity basketball coach at Longmont High School.
That's crazy. That's really interesting. He's got a fascinating, I got to get him on. He's got a fascinating personal story as well. Obviously, I haven't played at KU and everything. Okay, so then how did you decide to leave to go to Boise and work for Leon?
Well, so now to kind of backtrack, so my claim to fame is that, you know, after our first year, we had a great year at Weber. You know, now lo and behold, I go, and Coach Ray was very good friends with an AAU coach in Oakland named Raymond Young, who ran the Oakland Rebels. So for guys that know, I mean, there's the Oakland Soldiers, which is the big Nike AAU team, and then, you know, the Oakland Rebels were kind of just, you know, the hodgepodge group that just kind of, you know, went and played in random local tournaments. Well, Coach Ray had established, you know, he established a really good relationship with Ray. He's like, hey, you need to come out and look at one of these, you know, one of my guards. And so go out during the spring period in April, and I forget where it was. I think it was actually down in Houston at the Kingwood, when it used to be the Kingwood down there.
Kingwood Classic,
and so there's this guard. You know, I'm in this back gym. There's this guard who's probably about 5'11" at the time, about 155 pounds, but had freakish long arms, and you could just tell. I mean, he could pass, handle, and shoot. And lo and behold, I see Damian Lillard. And so basically, come back in a time nobody knew who Damian Lillard was. He had actually transferred high schools from St. Joe's to Oakland High after his sophomore year. And wasn't on anybody's radar, but I just saw something in him, and lo and behold, we decided to offer him. And so we were the first school to offer Lillard after the spring period. And he didn't blow up until probably the last game of July in Vegas, going, you know, summer of his senior year, where he was playing against EBO, who had, like, Luke Babbitt, Armand Johnson, a bunch of dudes. I'm not sure if Deshaun Stevenson was on that team or not, but he basically goes for like 48 in front of every coach in the Western United States. And I'm like,
and you're like, oh God, yeah.
Man, I'm just sitting there just like, oh, this is all this work is for naught. But which carries on to this day. He is such a unique person and a unique player. And what he is, he's as loyal as loyal can be. And what he could also do is, he could sniff out BS. Like, he knew guys who told him what he wanted to hear, he just would basically cut you off. And I was kind of the one guy, for whatever reason, maybe I was smart or maybe not smart, I was like, hey, we're not going to promise you anything. We're just going to promise you an opportunity. And he had seen what his older brother had gone through when he went to junior college for football and didn't play right away. And he saw how miserable he was. And so he knew he wanted to be someplace where he knew he could maybe come in and play right away, and he wanted to be around the right people. He wanted to get out of Oakland. And so we basically visited St. Mary's, and then he visited us, and then we got him committed. And if you would have ever told me that he would have turned into the player that he's turned into now, I thought you were crazy. I thought he'd be a really, really good player, a big sky type player of the year as a sophomore, and then a guy that'd play overseas. But I mean, now he's turned himself into one of the 10 best players in the world.
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of people, Greg, obviously, my brother was at Cal, and Greg's like, he was a two guard. You know, he's a 5'11 two guard. And, you know, like, we just, the big schools had trouble seeing him. Like, can you play at that size at the two in the Pac-12? And it's interesting. I think a lot of these guys, they do outthink themselves. You know, Kawhi Leonard, why didn't anybody in the Pac-12 offer him a scholarship? Like, well, he's a big guy. He's a 5'4 in college. Like, who cares? The guy could really, really play. Whereas when you're at Weber, you just go, and if you can play, you know, you don't necessarily, maybe you don't carry the same, you have to check a couple of boxes in order to play for us. Is that fair?
No, that's definitely fair. But I think he was a guy that we knew, and that's kind of how I got to where I got to. Because just, I think that's what helps you too as a coach, when you've had to coach at different levels, to where you could kind of understand, and you have to kind of see some things that other guys don't. So for me, having been at Division II, haven't been in junior college, and then having to go to Weber State, and you see different levels, and you see, okay, who can you recruit, who can't you recruit? Because so many guys, so many assistant coaches, they just waste time recruiting guys that they can't get. And so then they miss out on the guys that they should be recruiting. And then you got to be able to see, you know, the forest through the trees, and maybe see that, like, Damian, he didn't turn 18 until July after he graduated from high school. Same thing when I recruited Chandler Hutchison to Boise State. He was a guy that, when he was playing, he was a junior in high school, he was 6'3", he was playing JV the first semester of his junior year of high school. That's and crazy. Then lo and behold, by the time he's a senior in high school, he goes from a JV player, in a year's time, he goes to 6'7", 6'8", he's a top 100 player in the country. And, you know, you just got to see, you know, some of those things that some other guys can't see, or some of the bigger schools, you know, when you're in the Pac-12, you can't roll the dice on that unless you're really confident in your ability to see things. And there's a lot of assistant coaches that just don't have that.
Okay, so you're at Boise.
And I go to funny story is, so Rex Walters, you know, former
Kansas. Oh yeah, you went to San Francisco. I forgot you went to San Francisco. That's right. Yeah.
Yes. So he, you know, so me and him get really close, because he ends up, after he's done playing in the NBA, then he kind of made a stop overseas, and then made his way to playing in, like, the USBL, I think, because he played for Kevin Pritchard in Kansas City.
The ABA.
And so he was living in South Kansas City. He was living in Olathe. And so he decides, you know, after he's done playing, I want to get into coaching. And so he basically becomes our grad assistant at Emporia State. And so me and him for four or five months, I mean, just spend every day with each other, get really, really close. He never got to the season, because then Coach Drew, I think that's when Scott got the Baylor job. And so Bryce, so Homer had a spot open in the staff, and so Rex left kind of like in September to go to Valpo. And so while I was at Weber, Rex goes from Valpo to Florida Atlantic, where he ends up working for Matt Doherty. Matt Doherty gets, you know, the job there, turns it around 2 years, gets the SMU job. Now Rex becomes the coach of Florida Atlantic. So Rex and I, being as close as I was, hey, I want you to come be my associate coach, I mean, be my right-hand guy, let's go. So I'm like, well, we just signed Lillard, and but Rex is my guy, so let's go. So wife and I were down in Boca Raton, about to buy a house. The market was crazy at that time. It's Wednesday. The next day we're going to put an offer on the house. Lo and behold, the search firm running the search for San Francisco calls and says, hey, listen, wants to fly you in. Rex, being from San Jose originally, is like, I'm interested. I'm like, Rex, I just played San Francisco twice that year. It's an absolute train wreck. It's the worst job in the country. And that's when your former coach came in there for a few games, and just, I mean, it was just a tough, tough job. And so, but yeah. Rex goes in, decides to take the job. Lo and behold, I'm like, oh man. I mean, I just went from Boca Raton to San Francisco. And now Coach Ray walks in. He's like, hey, you don't have to go. Because lo and behold, Lillard had just called at 7 o'clock in the morning when he had never called Coach Ray. He's like, is it true that Coach Linder's going to San Francisco? And being a Bay Area guy, being across the bridge at Oakland, Coach Ray's like, and you make my life a lot easier if you stay. And I'm like, don't worry. You're talking about the one guy in the world that won't leave in Lillard. So make my way to USF and started that process, helped Rex turn that around. And then lo and behold, you realize quickly those WCC jobs are really, really hard. When you're playing for third or fourth place every year and you're playing the CIT or the CBI, because Gonzaga, all those presidents, ADs, they want to compete with Gonzaga, but they don't realize they're 20 years behind Gonzaga. And I just knew after we finished in third place my second year there, I was like, man, this is tough. And so Leon gets the job at Boise State, and I decide, hey, I'm probably taking a step back because I was the associate head coach of San Francisco. Dave Wojcik, who ends up being the head coach of San Jose State, Leon brings him in as the associate coach. So now I take a step back in terms of pay and title, but I just knew in the end it could be a much better job, especially with Boise moving into the Mountain West. And then that's when we start the Boise State journey.
So Leon gives you the offensive coordinator role. What was that like?
The way Leon is very unique in terms of how he handles things. And Leon is basically an NFL head coach, a CEO. I mean, he knows what he's good at. He knows what he's not good at. And he has no issues delegating everything and giving you total autonomy. Like, you know, we're sitting there as I'm the offensive coordinator. We're sitting there playing Dayton in the NCAA tournament against Dayton at Dayton. And, you know, we got timeout.
I was there, by the way.
Yeah,
on the other side of the court,
you were there. And I'm the one sitting there drawing up the play, and he just sits there and he doesn't bat an eye. And so we knew when we got the job, and we had a transition year where we're going to have 1 year in the WAC, and then we were going to make the move to the Mountain West. You know, and I know how good the Mountain West was back then, and we knew that we couldn't get better athletes than San Diego State, UNLV, New Mexico. And so our thing was, we can't beat them in the air. We're going to have to beat these dudes on the ground. And so that's where we recruited guys 1 through 5 that could pass down the shoot. Because we knew in Boise we could recruit good guards. It's a lot easier to recruit good guards than it is to find the 6'10", 6'11 guy that's a pro that's protecting the rim and, you know, the Alex Kirks of the world and the guys that those guys had at that time, UNLV. And so that's why we recruited Nick Duncan. That's why we recruited James Webb. And so now our 4s and 5s are bringing your guys away from the basket. Now we got a guy in Derek Marks who's the best guard in the league. Now he's, you know, being able, we can create switches, create mismatches. Now we create space. And so that's from an offensive standpoint how kind of things evolved. I thought we knew that we couldn't beat him with athleticism. We had to beat him with skill. So that's when I really, in 2010-11, really started diving into Europe, really watching a lot of European basketball, not just watching the EuroLeague, but, you know, talking to European guys, some of the guys in the NBA that were from Europe, and say, hey, give me some of the teams that, you know, because Barcelona, Real Madrid, you know, Fenerbahce, I mean, those guys have the best. Now, let me find the guys that are going to kind of be like us who don't have the best players, but from a schematic standpoint are, you know, ahead of the game. And so everything we started doing was coming from Europe. And then lo and behold, now, you know, the Spurs win the championship in 14-15, and then it just catches fire. Well, we were always three or four years ahead of trying to teach that system. And so that's kind of how it evolved offensively. That's what made us really hard to guard, and something that I carried, you know, with me to UNC and now to Wyoming.
Okay, let's get to the UNC job. Obviously, Tad had taken it from no one ever talked about Northern Colorado. You guys were able to be one of the premier programs in the Big Sky Conference. How did it come about? You're at Boise. How'd you get the job?
Well, I mean, it's May, which, you know, I mean, that's usually a month behind everything else. And the previous coach that was Tad's former assistant, you know, got in some trouble with the NCAA, and a lot of trouble. And so now I'm looking at a situation, well, you know, stay here at Boise, or at some point I'm going to have to roll the dice. And I knew the job, I knew the league, having grown up in the area, having been at Weber State. It's like, you know, it's a place where you can win at. Because you know and I know, there's 353 Division I jobs, or how many there are now. And there's a lot of them where John Wooden couldn't win at, and they're just bad jobs. And I thought that it was a job that you could win at. And even though I knew that I was going to walk into a situation where we're probably going to be getting a postseason ban, even maybe 2 postseason bans, loss of scholarships. And so, you know, from the 4 years I was there, this last season was the first time we had 13 full scholarships. We were at 9 scholarships year 1, we were at 10 year 2, and then we were at 11 in year 3. But what I did was I was fortunate enough to hire a really good staff, and then we just never really made any excuses about our situation. We had a postseason ban the first year. I was fortunate to inherit a really good guard. The previous staff were recruited in Jordan Davis, who ended up, you know, becoming the Big Sky Player of the Year. I redshirted two seniors that first year, knowing that they weren't going to play in the postseason, added Andre Spite, who ended up setting the Big Sky single-season all-time scoring record with 950-some points in the season, who came from Arizona State. And so just built it that way and made a lot of threes. And then defensively, we decided, you know what, we're not going to let teams make threes. And we've been number one in the country the last 3 years and not letting teams attempt threes. I think sometimes people get fooled when they want to look at three-point field goal percentages, whether or not you're a good defensive team or not. Well, I mean, if you're making two threes a game and on four attempts and you're shooting 50%, I don't care if you're shooting 50% because now you just made two threes. You just scored 6 points. We make 10 or 11 threes. We're going to put a lot of pressure on you to beat us with twos. And so that's kind of how the system evolved offensively to defensively to where, you know, a lot of the same things we'll do here at Wyoming.
Okay, so let's get to those threes. Okay, so, I mean, is that just – but so many other teams are just loading up on the basketball, right? They just, that's really the style, making you throw skip passes, putting – you know, some guys call it three on the ball or whatever. How does your defense work that you take away so many threes?
Well, it's, you know, for us, and it'll be a little bit different. There'll probably be a few adjustments, you know, kind of coming up a level, but you know, we also played a lot of Mountain West teams and bigger schools when I was at UNC. But especially in the Big Sky, we just didn't feel like there was guys that could beat you at the rim with twos. You know, you've seen as much basketball as anyone. There's not a lot of guys that are, even at the Power Five level, that are great finishers at the rim. And so for us, it was, okay, in our league, we knew there would be a lot more guys that could shoot. And so then, okay, let's take that away. And then as we kept going into it, okay, now we're going to be really good at not fouling. So not just the fact that, okay, we're not letting you shoot threes, we're also not letting you get and one. So, I mean, we work diligently at not fouling and walling up and understanding where our rotation is going to come from in terms of at the rim when we wall and crack on guys. And then we're going to limit you to one shot. I mean, the habits that, you know, that we built from a defensive rebounding standpoint, where we've been top 25 in the country the last 4 years in defensive rebounding percentage, we're only going to give you one shot. So we put a lot of pressure on you over the course of the game to try to make, you know, try to make layups at the rim. Or what you do is you force a lot of dumb teams into shooting non-paint twos, pull-up twos, which just allows us to get out and run and go.
Okay, so now – the Wyoming job, I mean, everybody in the kind of the area knew that Allen was in trouble. I mean, I saw him early in the year. I knew the contract situation. I was like, and it's a tough league because even though the top of the league is not what it was back when you were at Boise, right? When New Mexico was rolling, Vegas was pumping out one and duns, and San Diego State was a top 10 team. San Diego State's back, appears to be back for a while. I think New Mexico's getting close. I think UNLV is much more stable now than it's been in maybe the last 5 years. We'll see what TJ does in year two. Utah State, you know, I don't know what happens with that run, you know, losing your best player and probably losing Nima Keita, but they've gone from a team that couldn't compete, you know, stepping up from the Big West to one that won the Mountain West the year before and then won the conference tournament, obviously, this year. The league in the middle is really good. I mean, now Colorado State, I think, is really well coached. Boise is really well coached. And you're starting to get – once you get continuity with those coaches, you start to – the teams in the front range are good, man. So taking over the Wyoming job, like what – take me through the – where are you in the process? I know you've hired, what, two of your assistants so far?
No, well, my third one was hired today, Sundance Wicks, who was the head coach at Missouri Western State College. He's done a fantastic job there. I mean, after, I guess, probably Coach Musselman, he might be the second most famous college coach on Twitter. But a guy that's, you know, really good, who's from Wyoming, a guy that's going to bring, you know, a lot of juice, a lot of energy to the program. But for me, it was, you know, we had played him three times, and we'd beaten him the last 3 years here in Wyoming. It's a job where I felt like I didn't have to change anything that I did at UNC in terms of recruiting, in terms of anything, just because I knew now that we were going to be recruiting to a better conference with better facilities, better resources, which ultimately is going to equal better players. I mean, our final ranking this year in KenPom was 75th in the country. Our net was, you know, like 99. And so we were doing the right things. I just think that there's just some of those other things. As you know, from visiting up here, Marlin's a tough job. It's a tough job because you're geographically, there's not a lot of players around you. But if you can get them to campus, our facilities, not just the arena, the weight room that's in the arena, the locker room, but just the student athlete, the cafeteria, the training table, all the other things. And the facilities are a top three job in the Mountain West.
Yes,
and I really believe that. So if you can get guys here, which is the hard part, you know, get them here to see it, then you can get them. And then you're going to get guys for the right reason. And if you got guys who really want to get better, they're going to be able to get better. And I think that's the thing that excited me. And then you add, it's one of the few jobs in the country where people still really care about the university. They care because nowadays with TV, watching games on the phone, watching games on the internet, there's not as many people come to the games. But, you know, I remember when we were playing against Larry Nance, Josh Adams, and Larry Shiat and those guys back when we were at Boise. I mean, this place was rocking and rolling. So now you get the passion and pride that exists in Wyoming because you are the one state, you know, the only team, the only college in the state. Now you get the people behind you, and I think that's just such a unique situation that allows you to create a job that could be even that much better than what it is.
Are you going to do some of that stuff that Leon does, like walking across the river? Are you going to get a barrel outfit?
I'm not sure if I'm going to get on. I'm not sure if I'm going to get on back of the horse, you know, and do the bucking bronco or cross the Boise River like Leon did. But I'm sure there'll be a few things out there. But I just think it's the right job. It's the right fit. You have to build it like you did at Boise. Which is, you know, you have to go out and find some different guys that other guys maybe miss on. You have to go fish in different ponds. You can't fish. There's no pond in your backyard, so you got to go in some different ponds. But my assistants will know exactly what they're looking for. They know not to bring anybody to the table that can't shoot. And then we'll just kind of develop it and build it from here. Because I do think we inherited a core group of guys, as we saw, made a run in the Mountain West tournament that can compete and help you win games. It's just now we got to add a few more guys after those guys.
Yeah, it's interesting. You point out you can't shoot. It's become the number one skill, and I would say shooting and then passing even more than dribbling. Right?
Yep.
Like, you know, the passing skill is a hard one. If you don't have it, it's really, really hard to kind of develop it at this stage. And then defensively, it really is more about toughness and buy-in than it is necessarily about pure athletic ability. Right? I mean, like. If you can shoot and you're tough and you got good habits and you can pass, like we can find a way to hide your weaknesses.
Yeah, there's no question. And that's what we did at UNC. And there's a lot of times when we'd walk on that floor and the other team would look down and like, these guys, really? This is a team that's won 20 games. You know, you go to West Virginia where we did this year, the guys, Culver and those guys are probably looking down. Coach is telling us we got to be worried about these guys. Well, then, lo and behold, now you're in a dogfight because guess what? All these guys, they can pass, handle, and shoot. And these guys, from a defensive standpoint, they know the game plan. And over the course of, you know, 70 to 75 defensive possessions in the game, they're not going to break down and make mistakes. And when you have those type of guys that really do have a feel for the game and an understanding of the game, I just think there's a lot of stupid in college basketball, and you can exploit stupid, and that's what we're going to try to do is minimize stupid and make sure that you know, we just don't beat ourselves, because a lot of teams, if you let them, they'll beat themselves.
I agree. All right, here's what I want to do real quick to sum up. Give me one thing that either funny story or interesting thing about the coaches that you've coached under. Ricardo Patton. Give me something, because here's what I know about Ricardo Patton. Everybody liked the guy. I was told he was a black belt and like a scratch golfer, right? Like,
great story. So Coach Patton, so being a great golfer, yes, true black belt golfer. So especially when I was younger and before four kids, I mean, each kid probably added two strokes to my handicap, but I was close to a scratch golfer coming out of college. And so in the summertime, we went out to Boulder Country Club, Coach Mo, Ricardo, myself, Lonnie Porter, a longtime coach at Regis University, that was best friends with Carl. So we went out and played, and you know, I kicked Ricardo's ass that day. And he comes in, you know, the next day, and he's like, "We're playing." I'm like, "What? I mean, I'm the peon. I mean, on the staff." He's like, "Get your clubs. We're going back out and playing." And I'm like, "Oh boy, this is not good." So, I mean, he was so competitive, and he was so mad that I beat him that day that you know, he just couldn't sleep. And so now, lo and behold, I got to go back there. And Coach Mo, we're on the 18th hole, and we're in this match. And he's like, I got this putt. I got a birdie putt to basically win the match. And he's like, you know, I'm not going to tell you to miss that putt, but you might want to miss that putt. And lo and behold, I missed it, even though I was trying to make it. But that was the one golf story with Ricardo Patton, who was a hell of a golfer, and gave me the best advice of any coach that I'd worked for, when he had said, at the end of the day, I don't need tricky plays. I just need tricky players.
Yeah, I like that. I've heard a different, like, there are no, I've heard the, there are no trick plays. I've heard that expression before. Let's see here. Give me something about Leon.
David Moe.
Okay. Okay. Go ahead.
David Moe is as unique of a coach that there's out there. And my guy, Coach Moe, this was during the internet, you know, Texas Hold'em gambling era, yes, when it was at the very beginning. And he would basically, in his office, he'd have a blank, the dry erase board. And the only thing would be on it would be a number, either red or black, up on the right-hand side of the corner. And everybody would walk in the office and be like, well, there's nothing on the board. What's that number? Well, that was where he was at in terms of his winnings or what he's been losing playing Texas Hold'em online.
That's amazing. That's really, it was sharks and minnows. Okay, what about Rex? No, Grant. Grant.
In terms of just best friend, I mean, best human being you'll ever come in contact with. Just understands people at the highest level. My friendship with him is one that'll last a lifetime, and just very fortunate to have crossed paths with him.
Okay. Yeah, give me, let's go to Rex.
Rex. So Rex is done playing, and I'm still fairly young. We're in Emporia State. So it's lunchtime. I was like, hey, let's go down and play some one-on-one. You know, and this is a guy that's a 8-year NBA vet, a hell of a player. And, you were playing one-on-one, 2 or 3 dribble limit. And the first time we check up, you know, he kind of brings the ball up over his head, and I just pop him in the nose. And then right then and there, he's like, okay, this guy's not scared of me. He doesn't care that I'm Rex Walters. And so from that point on, we just, you know, that's what probably, you know, allowed our friendship and in relation to grow so much. Cause everyone's scared of Rex, and lo and behold, I was the one guy that wasn't scared of him.
Which is probably why he liked you so much. Coach Ray.
You just, what you see is what you get, and just the consistency every day, and just the toughness and the chip on your shoulder mentality, but also too, just how he relates to players and just gets the best out of them. But he's a guy that gave me my first opportunity Division I wise, and allowed me to, you know, basically get a foot in the door, and can't thank him enough.
All right, now you're up in the front range. What is the most, like, country thing? Because, like, as much as you're from Colorado, you're still, you know, a basketball guy. You're still a suburb guy. You're not a country dude, right? But Greeley's kind of, like, right there, borderline between you're out in the sticks and being a bit of a suburb. Now you're in Wyoming, Laramie. You know, it's pickup trucks, it's boots and jeans. Give me the most country thing that you've done as a head coach that you never thought you would ever do before.
Whew, that's a good question. I haven't actually had to do too many. Greeley has actually evolved to where it's not too country. That's a good question. Not anything too country yet. I love the outdoors. My fishing partner is former Gonzaga assistant / USD head coach, now Colorado assistant, Billy Greer. And so I enjoy in the summertime being Billy, going up into the mountains and fly fishing, and I'm sure that Billy will be making a lot more trips up to Laramie, because there's a lot of great fishing holes up in those neck of the woods, and so I'm sure I'll see Billy a lot more up in Laramie than I even do see him down in Boulder.
What's a reasonable expectation for you guys? You have no idea in your roster, obviously. This is such a weird time. We'll wrap on this. What's a reasonable, for you personally, what's reasonable to expect? Is it wins and losses? Is it competitiveness? What's reasonable for your first year?
The beauty of getting the job, there's no beauty of getting the job during the coronavirus, but the one thing that not having to do a real press conference and how that kind of takes up your time, I just went up there last Tuesday, signed a contract, they did a little social media release, and then what I did was I just got in the car and drove to see Hunter Thompson, who lives in Cheyenne. Hunter Maldonado is down in Colorado Springs, Quan Marble, and Kenny Foster, and went and really saw those four guys and got in front of them. And knowing that what their strengths and weaknesses are since I played them the last 3 years, I knew exactly who they were and had recruited some of those guys at Northern Colorado. And just basically just selling the vision on, hey, listen, and Coach Edwards, I mean, Allen Edwards is as good of a human being as you'll find in college basketball. I mean, there's not one person who will say one bad thing about Allen Edwards. I just try to go in there and just say, listen, we're going to maintain the family-like atmosphere that Allen created, but we're going to do some things different from an offense and defensive standpoint that I think can really, you know, help you guys. And we're not going to lose. And I do think with those four guys, and I think with this virus, being that there's a lot of uncertainty here late, I think you can go out, and if you're in the right place at the right time, you can steal some guys right now from a recruiting standpoint. And so if we can add three or four guys to that core group of guys, I'm expecting us to win and compete in the Mountain West next year.
Awesome stuff. Congrats on the move. I know there's a bunch of other stuff to get, and we'll have to do one of these shows while fly fishing. I got to learn how to fly fish. In the meantime, enjoy whatever you're doing in terms of the move, because it's the most you'll probably ever be involved with the move.
Well, you know, it was funny. Before you called, in between phone calls, I have four kids, and my four-year-old, she wanted me to, you know, play Prince Eric while she was Anna and Elsa and Elena of Avalor. So I just know this. Hopefully, you know, we'll figure out a cure or a vaccine here pretty soon. What's going to happen is there's going to be a mom that figures out a vaccine here in the next probably 48 to 72 hours. Because every mom right now in the country is absolutely losing their minds, and rightfully so.
No question about it. And teachers are not even going to have to ask for a raise when they come back in. All right. Enjoy for the Frozen 2 exploits and playing Eric. I want video of that. Congrats on the job, and thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Doug. I appreciate it.
What a great talk, huh? Very interesting on how he's bounced around, how he's got these jobs. Now he has a plan for how to turn around Wyoming basketball. All right. Any of your thoughts or comments, feel free to tweet me at Gottlieb Show, also on IG. At Gottlieb Show. The Doug Gottlieb Show airs 3 to 6 Eastern every day on Fox Sports Radio, foxsportsradio.com, the iHeartRadio app. You can download the podcast of that as well. We talk hoops. We talk all sports as well. 12 to 3 Pacific time, 3 to 6 Eastern. Anyway, thanks so much for downloading. Hope you subscribed. And don't forget to rate us, review us, say something nice. I think it helps me in my pocket. In the meantime, enjoy being trapped in your home, but listening to All Ball.